Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Focus Fire episode number 20. I'm Alan, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dirty Pool.
Hey, guys.
Focus Fire is a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast aimed at providing you focus and practical advice you can actually use to improve your game. Now, this is brought to you through the TFG Radio Network of Fine Podcasts. If you have any questions or comments, email us at focusfirepodcast@gmail.com. Also, our new Facebook page. Check us out. Let's search for Focused Fire. Tonight, we're going to be diving into two topics. And since there's not too much going on right now because of the plague spreading across the land, the touch of Nurgle, not too much to talk about as far as like the meta and tournament results and what's going on. So we're going to go into the Psychic Awakening. We're going to talk about orcs, which is Jeff's specialty. And then we'll talk a little bit about Psychic Awakening and what it means for Thousand Suns.
Right on, yeah. The non-existent meta right now. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting time to have a quote-unquote competitive podcast because there's no competition going on. So it'll be interesting to see how long this goes on. I think I heard that the BAO is going to be canceled because KublaCon issued that they are canceling due to the coronavirus. So kind of an interesting development. I don't know if that's true, but I heard that from someone. I haven't verified it or anything, but I'll put it on the air just because I like to spread rumors that it may or may not be true.
I felt it's going to be unlikely that it's going to go off without a hitch. So at this point in time, especially in San Francisco, and but a huge gathering of people seems like it's not necessarily wise, but we'll see. But and we're broadcasting today instead of our usual studio. We're in our, this is the home edition.
I'm Skype edition.
I had to brush off the dust off my Y2K bunker and sitting here on my throat of toilet paper and ready for the apocalypse. At least my ass is. So
I love it. Well, so Psychic Awakening happened for orcs. And
wait. Before we do that, we talk about dojo time. And I owe Brian Hunter from Flying Monkey GT, I think he said $5 to lease that term. So didn't you play in a tournament not too long ago?
Oh yeah, right before the lockdown became. I braved the pre-lockdown world and played in a little RTT. It was fun. I was kind of pissed because I got the bye round one, and I was like, I go to like two RTTs a year. Like, what the fuck? You know? So I sat around and talked to Adam from TFG Radio for 4 hours, and then I force paired in my second round against Richard Cozart, our teammate, because I was playing 270 Gretchen, and I wanted to see how they did against the Possessed, and I played the game all wrong. And just let him chew on Gretchen piecemeal instead of using the unit of Meganobs I had put in the army specifically to deal with them. I never got the chance to actually use the Meganobs in Subzest because I continually had my Gretchen pushing into the middle of the board because I took, like an idiot, I took recon. I apparently didn't learn anything from when I was playing orcs and learned that lesson. Don't take recon against aggressive melee armies. I learned that back in the summer of 2019 when I was playing against Gene Star Cold a lot. I would take recon, and I couldn't get recon because I had to kind of zone out and, like, you know, be really defensive. And instead of heeding that advice, I took recon, so I had to continually be too aggressive and allowed his Possessed Star to kind of hang out in the middle of the board behind this central ruin and out of line of sight. And it would just kind of poke its head out, eat a unit of Gretchen. And, you know, he was able to do that for the whole game and pretty much control the game like that. Didn't really come into my side of the board until, like, the end of the game when we ran out of time at like turn five or something like that, but it was not a good win for me, or a loss for me. I think I could have played it better, but I definitely missed this iteration. Didn't have any ludas in it, and I definitely missed the ludas because I didn't have any like high volume shooting, and you know the shock attack guns in my army are really good against tough singular models like vehicles and stuff like that, but when it comes to, you know, just infantry, other infantry hordes or just infantry based lists like intercessor spam or possessed bombs or paladins like that, like the shock attack guns aren't going to do a ton of work, unfortunately, because they lack the rate of fire to kill those enough models to actually matter. And the Gretchen, of course, don't kill anything because they're Gretchen. So I then played my last round is against a guy with a local guy here in out of Hollywood, who was running two Lords of Skull, all corn, pure corn. And that was a pretty uneventful game. He rushed me with two Rhinos full of Berserkers on turn one, and the Lord of Skulls moved up. My Gretchen all advanced and charged the Rhinos, wrapped them up, and so they couldn't get out. And then Gazgul walked up, and old Gazgul, before his new rules were leaked, punched the Rhinos to death. And the Berserkers weren't able to get out because there's nowhere for them to be placed. So he did that to both Rhinos, and I just pretty much hugged Rhinos and Lords of Skulls with Gretchen for the whole game, and my shock attack guns picked things up relatively easily. So that was not a very hard game or a good – it wasn't really a good test, you know, but definitely the game against Richard Cozart was a great test. So that's my dojo time. Did you get anything in?
No, I just I talked I got in a couple of league games just before our last recording, and then the curtain fell down upon us, so –
yeah, we have suspended our league as well because of the coronavirus. So.
Yeah, there's no place to play, and people don't want to use people at each other's houses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. So let's talk about Orcs and the Psychic Awakening.
So overall, you know, there was some – they leaked – you know, I've seen the Gazgul leaks before, and now – I've got full leaks from the Psychic Awakening for Orcs, and I guess I'll just kind of talk about Gazgul first. My big issue with Gazgul is, you know, the fact that he got 12 wounds and is now targetable as a character isn't as big of a deal because he can only lose 4 wounds a phase. And that's a kind of a cool rule because he'd definitely survive if your opponent just has shooting. He's going to at least live 3 turns, and there's potential ways to heal him with some stratagems if you have a Pain Boy. Goth Pain Boy to heal him up, but it also, you know, to me, the big loss for him was he lost the infantry keyword, so he's now a monster, and because of that, all kinds of buffs from the Orc Codex just no longer apply to him. He cannot advance and charge with his own aura. Like, his aura allows everyone to advance and charge who's an infantry, but he's not infantry, so he can't advance and charge. He can't walk through walls. He can't be healed by regular Pain Boys with their regular rules. They have to use a strat on him. He can't be de-jumped. There's like a million things that he can't do now because he can't fight twice, for instance, because he's not an infantry model. So losing infantry is a huge deal for Orcs. And because of that, I don't think Gazgul is going to be a terribly good choice. If you are going to use him, I think there's some value to him deep striking him and bring him down on like the bottom of turn 3 when your army has killed, your shock attack guns have killed a lot of the heavy hitting stuff that your opponent has that might be able to kill Gazgul. And then you bring him down close to your enemy's line, and he just makes he just kind of rolls through your opponent's army. Hopefully, you know, it takes him 3 whole turns to kill him. And by then, you know, he's done enough damage so that he's, you know, really, cause you know, it's one of those things when you drop like a big scary unit in your opponent's grill, they can usually just turn around and deal with it in one turn. But with Gazgul, it's going to take them 2, maybe 3 turns to deal with it, depending on their army composition. And that could be a valuable way to play Gazgul. I haven't really tested it, and I don't think anyone will test it for quite some time.
By turn 5 and 6, you know, your opponent's firepower is so diminished that they'd have trouble killing Gazgul at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have bottom of turn and you drop them on bottom of 3, and then they only have their 4th turn, 5th turn, and 6th turn to try and kill him. If they have shooting, they're only going to kill him at the end of turn 6. So he's going to have turn 4 and 5 to just do whatever the hell he wants. You know, and that's assuming he doesn't take any wounds like Overwatch or Psychic Phase or the Combat Phase or anything like that. So you got to be careful with that. But, like, you know, he's going to have an impact on your opponent's army for sure. And even then, he's 4-up invulnerable save, 2-up armor, T7, 12 wound monster, so he's not easy to kill, especially if your army has actually, you know, reached your opponent's line and has managed to deal with a lot of their heavy firepower. So all in all, Gazgul, I give him a B. I don't think he's going to be terribly competitive, but he's one of those things that if your opponent can't deal with him, he's going to be a really tough thing to use. And I think there's some value to like putting him in your army and just kind of putting him on the board, even turn one, and making your opponent have to overextend to kill him. Because if your opponent doesn't have the ability to just kill him in one turn with like by doing psychic powers, close combat, and shooting, they're going to just shoot at him for three turns. He's going to die, right? But if your opponent does have the ability to like do some psychic powers or some close combat to try and kill him faster, they may overextend trying to get him dead in the first two or three turns of the game. So you might, because you have Gaskell and you push him forward on turn one, your opponent might try and kill him in one turn or two turns, and he may overextend, allowing the rest of your army to capitalize on that mistake. So I think that's kind of a neat way to use him. But to be honest, like, any strategy that requires your opponent to overextend and like make a mistake is not a great strategy, in my opinion, because you're just, you know, what if they don't make that mistake? What if they're like, oh, I'll just shoot him for three turns and, you know, or, you know, move block him with some infantry squads and I don't really care about him anymore. So that's my thought on Gaskell. It's kind of a drag. I'm definitely going to get that model, though. He looks badass. So
how many points is he?
He's like 285 points, too. He went up like 50 points or something like that from his prior iteration. And, you know, so he's more expensive to boot and less useful.
Yeah, the stats went way up, but the stat that you don't want to go up too far is wounds. That's the big
breaker. If he had under 10 wounds and had all his current rules, I couldn't lose 4 wounds or more in a phase, that would be absurd. It'd be like, you know, he's a character and you can't even kill him when you do get to him. That would be absurd. So, all right. So then they have the new specialist mobs, quote unquote. And really, this is just new clans. They worded it in a really ass-backwards way. They, like, did this thing where it's like, you know, you can replace your clan keyword with a subculture, but it's like they should have just said these are new clans because that's what they are. They are, but the only asterisk on that is that not all units in the clan cultures only apply to certain units, and those are specified in there in the description of the clan culture. So, like, arsonist, it applies to everyone, including Gretchen, I think. Because it doesn't actually exclude them. But anyways, there's a bunch of these like extra clans. But the big problem here is that like the Orc Codex, the clan rules and the clan specific stratagems are really, really strong. Like the three big ones that you see almost every competitive Orc army built around is Death Skulls, which get a free reroll to hit, a free reroll to wound, and a free reroll to damage every time they shoot or attack. That's insanely good. And they get a 6-up invulnerable save and become objective secured if they're infantry. So you have like, that's a really, really good clan trait. Then you have Evil Sons, which is +1 to move, +1 to advance, and +1 to charge. Super good clan trait. It means you're deep striking, you have an 8-inch rollable charge with orcs, which is phenomenal. And it, you know, makes orcs way more mobile than they previously had been. And of course, Bad Moons, you get reroll ones when you're shooting, but they get access to the shoot twice stratagem, which is phenomenal. So, you know, you're giving up those, in order to become one of these subcultures, you have to give up your clan. So to me, you're balancing, like you're comparing like, okay, what am I going to give up? And if it's one of those really good clan traits, it's probably not worth it. I don't think most of them are going to be useful. There is some like niche builds that you might see. Like there's one for Flamers, which you might see some play with Burnabombas, which are the planes that orcs have that can drop like incendiary bombs and shoot Burnham missiles at people. There's going to be some play with those. I think people will test them out. And I'll kind of talk about those guys later. But they have a specific clan culture for them where they get to like reroll the number of shots and like get +1 to their bombing runs and stuff like that, which is kind of neat. Then there's one called Tin Heads, which is for Mega Knobs, which is, you know, there's been these, you know, 20 Mega Knob lists rolling around in the Orc, you know, meta for quite some time. And they perform okay. The problem is that they're an elite infantry model that is hitting on fours because of its power claw. However, subculture gives you +1 to hit with any mega armor unit. So suddenly you're kind of alleviating that -1 to hit. It balances itself out. You're hitting on threes. And if you get the WA banner, you're hitting on twos. That's kind of nice. But the problem is you give up the Evil Sun clan culture, which is usually what people would run with these. So they go from move 4 to 5 with Evil Suns, and they're more reliable when you deep strike them or to jump them. They only need to make an 8-inch charge instead of a 9-inch charge. So in this instance, you give up the mobility for some added accuracy in close combat. And I'm sure, as Alan would agree with, the it doesn't matter how accurate you are in close combat if you don't make the charge, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, mobility is important, so.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't rate Tin Heads over Evil Sons, but I think it is something that you might see a little bit of play in, people experimenting with it. And maybe it turns out to be better if you have, like, large central ruins where your guys can just sit and they're in the ruin. They don't need to be very mobile because you can just jump them there on a turn and they just sit there and say, okay, I may not have +1 to move, advance, and charge, but I can sit here, and if you come close to the center of the board, I'll reach out and kill you with my Mega Knobs. The final clan culture I wanted to talk about, which was actually a really good one in my opinion, is the Grot Mobs. Because Gretchen in the normal Orc Codex, they don't get any of the clan benefits. They just don't. They're just like scrubs. They're a little cult. They're like Chaos Cultists. They don't get any of the clan benefits. But this one, they get a 6-up invulnerable save, which is pretty damn good, because if you're running a Gretchen horde, you know, 200, 300 Gretchen, you're going to suddenly give a good portion or all of your army a 6-up invulnerable save is actually awesome.
Who would run an army like that?
Some fucking asshole. I don't know. And then the other thing they get is reroll ones if you're a Gretchen vehicle. So this is like all the mech guns. So mech guns are a pretty popular choice, and they're actually really good damage output. They're pretty flimsy. So giving them a 6-up invulnerable save and some additional accuracy is definitely good. And those kind of detachments anyways, you were just taking a bunch of Gretchen to fill out a battalion and then like 18 mech guns. So putting like 2 weird boys in there and making them the Grot Mobs clan is actually really good, because you don't lose anything. And that's why I think this is the only good subculture, is because you actually get something, and you don't have to replace it with something. You're not replacing something good with something subpar. So in this case, you're replacing nothing with something better. So I think it's a good clan trait.
Does it affect any other the Grot stuff, like Killikans and the buggies or anything?
Yes, it's any Gretchen unit. So Killikans, I think, are Gretchen units. So they get the 6-up invulnerable save and reroll once a hit because they're vehicles. I think the buggies are all Orc units. They're not Gretchen units. But, like, there are things like Grot tanks from Forge World, which benefit from this as well. So, you know, you can see some play there. And when you go from having nothing to having something, it's obviously going to be better. And some of the archetypes, like, you'll see that I've been kind of testing out, and then I know a bunch of other people – not a bunch, but some other people in the Orc meta have been trying is Gretchen Horde, where you have, like, 250 to 300 Gretchen. And suddenly, you know, if you're having 2 of those Gretchen detachments – be this Grot Mobs instead of what they were before, you get a 6-up invulnerable save, which, you know, increases your durability by 18%, which is not bad. So, you know, it's going to take getting a save when you wouldn't previously get a save is nice. Even if it's only a 6-up invulnerable save, it's still a marginal durability increase. Okay, so I guess since I'm just drowning on here, I will talk about the next thing. It's the custom jobs. So this is the essentially the Tau. In the last one, Tau got these prototype systems, which are essentially relics that you can put on like regular units in addition to characters. And this is the Orc version of it, except you have to pay CP to get them. So you don't get any for free, but you can get, I think you can take like a mech workshop. If you take the fortification, you might get 1 free upgrade. I'd have to read it again, but no one's going to take that because it's a piece of shit, and yet it burns a detachment. So, but you can unlock them for a CP, and they essentially upgrade subpar vehicle units in the Orc Codex. None of them were very good to begin with prior to this book, but with these upgrades, you might see them at least become relevant. I don't think they're going to be very competitive. There's definitely like people will try them out. You know, the Genestealer Cult Ridge Runner list has gained in popularity. So a lot of Orc players have been looking at, oh, you know, I can kind of emulate that style list with a bunch of the new Orc buggies, since they went down in points in Chapter Approved 2019. And now they have a bunch of upgrades you can give them for CP. And there's some new stratagems that we'll talk about later that you can also use on these buggies. But my assessment is that those lists are going to kind of just not really play to the strength of Orcs. Like running around with 10 or 12, you know, T7, like 8 or 10 wound vehicles isn't really a winning strategy in my mind, because they're very flimsy, and they don't really have that good of damage output. And, you know, you would better be, you would be better served doing that kind of MSU vehicle list with like Dark Eldar or Gene Sith Cult or hell, even Imperial Guard or something like that, because you're just more accurate and you have more damage output. So,
yeah, the Buggies is kind of interesting. They made all these nice new models, and they're playtesting or their rules are just not up to snuff. So maybe they overcompensated with the Space Marines. maybe we're going to release all these new Space Marine models. We better have really good rules for them, or else it'll end up like the Orc Buggies, and they went the pendulum swung the opposite direction. But yeah, it's too bad the Buggies ended up going over like a lead balloon, but hopefully maybe we'll see a little bit more play out of them with this Psychic Awakening.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely relevant, and you might see them in lists, but I don't expect them to make a huge splash and like be blowing up, you know, the tournament scene when it finally comes back from its hiatus. I do think there's a couple upgrades for like Gorkonauts and Morkonauts where you can upgrade their ballistic skill or give the Gorkonaut an upgraded like big machine gun he has. You can upgrade that to be like extra +1 to hit, which is nice on orcs. Obviously, +1 hits really nice. But for the most part, these custom jobs are like, you know, you're upgrading a unit that's not very good to be a little bit better. So, it's better than nothing, but I don't think it's going to make them competitive in the long run or even in the short term, really. I mean, like, if I played a guy with, you know, if I'm playing Space Marines and someone brought 12 Orc Buggies, I'd just be like, okay, I'm going to kill 6 of them on turn 1 and 6 of them on turn 2, you know? So it's kind of I don't know. I wouldn't be too worried about it. The next thing you get from the Psychic Awakening is actually one of the cooler parts of this is the clan specific psychic powers. So every clan gets access to a psychic power. Unfortunately, not unlike the Thousand Suns, which we'll talk about later, you don't automatically know these. You have to take them in place of your regular psychic power, and orcs only get access to one psychic power. So it's kind of like you get an extra option, but you kind of have to give up a spell. And, you know, the orc list, you know, really has like two spells that people take. It's the jump, and then you either take like Fist of Gork to buff one of your characters, or you take +1 attack on a big squad of boys. So if you have a third weird boy in your army, this is a good kind of spell for him to take as the additional clan-specific spell. And there's a couple of good ones here. The first one I want to talk about is the Death Skull one. This one's really interesting because it has like essentially you debuff an enemy unit and you give them -1 to hit, both in close combat and shooting. So that's just a great power to have in and of itself. Being able to tone down an enemy unit like a paladin squad or a possessed bomb or a big unit of 10 intercessors who's going to charge you is really nice. But the other side of that is it makes it so that all of your attacks get an extra AP against that unit in both melee and shooting. So this is really, really good because orc AP is pretty low. So if you have something like Ludas or even tank buses only have a 2 AP, if you can make that suddenly a -3 AP on like a vehicle, you're suddenly making it 3 up save to a 6 up save instead of a 5 up save. So, and Ludas will go from a -1 AP to -2 AP, which actually makes them pretty, it's a substantial damage increase against vehicles because, you know, most vehicles have a 3 up armor, and if you're only -1, you're suddenly, you know, they get a 4 up save, so half of your shots or wounds are bouncing off. If you change that to an additional -1, go up to a 5 up save, you're going to be doing a lot more damage with those Ludas. So I think this is actually a really good power. Because it also allows your orc boys to charge in and fight things with 2-up armor, which is a historic problem for orc boys. It's like they can't fight custodes, they can't fight Grey Knight paladins because they have 2-up armor. And when you have a 2-up armor, it's just you're not going to get enough wounds through.
Yeah, because paladins running around with 3 wounds and 2-up armor save, you're not going to be able to hack your way through that. But
yeah, this one might
help you out a little bit.
Yeah,
and also. And it'll keep your units alive, too, with them being -1 to hit.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, your 30 orc boys aren't going to, like, decimate a paladin unit now. But you'll go from doing, like, 3 wounds with 30 boys to, like, 6 to 8 wounds or something like that. Because failing a 3-up save is a lot easier than failing a 2-up save. So that's nice. It's kind of a cool power. Probably the best one, in my opinion. I know a lot of other orc players have been trying out this one for Evil Sons. And it's essentially you cast it on a vehicle, and the vehicle gets rerolls to hit. If you try and cast it on a big unit like a Gorkonaut or a Stompa, you have to do it on a higher warp charge, which to me makes it a little bit less reliable. And this doesn't really play into the evil, in my opinion, doesn't play into Evil Sun's strengths. Evil Sun units, or armies, you typically see them with a lot of boys and a lot of mega knobs. And so reroll the hit for vehicles doesn't really play into that kind of archetype. But, you know, people have been testing out Gorkonauts and Morkonauts with this reroll. And getting rerolls on a Gorkonaut with, like, where it's shooting, you know, 30, 35 shots in a turn is actually really useful. But, you know, I don't know if it's going to break the meta open or anything like that. But it's a nice upgrade to have. You know, I guess if you're using that. The other one, there's two others I want to talk about. The first one was from Blood Axes. It was leaked on Warhammer Community. Essentially, you select an enemy unit and you shut off their Overwatch capabilities, but also you make them fight. They cannot be selected to fight until after all Blood Axe units have fought. So this is really, really strong because you can't even interrupt with that unit because you can't. When you interrupt, you select a unit to fight. Outside the normal order, but you can't actually select that unit because of the psychic power. So it's a really good way to shut off an enemy unit, and then, you know, can charge it with three different units or something, or a bunch of characters. Suddenly they can't interrupt with that unit no matter what, which is a lot more powerful than a lot of the other rules that you see that are similar to this, where it's like you strike quote unquote last in the combat phase. Those ones you can interrupt with, but this one it doesn't appear that you can, and that may get FAQ'd to the all, you know, the other way. But as it's written right now, you can't even interrupt, which is really strong. Problem is, of course, is when you're playing Blood Axes, and Blood Axes aren't a really competitive clan. They don't really have any. Their clan trait is very. You can fall back and charge, which is nice, or fall back and shoot. It's not a bad ability, but it's not. They're not one of the top tier kind of lists, so I don't think you'll see too much of this. And the final one I like is the Bad Moons. It's plus one save for a unit. And you can put this on a vehicle, you know, make a big Gorkonaut or something, make it two up save, which is really nice for increasing their durability. You can put on Mega Knobs and put them into a one up save, which is actually really nice, especially if they're sitting in cover, so they have a zero up save. But then again, the problem is if you're taking Mega Knobs with Bad Moons, you're losing that mobility bonuses from Evil Suns that you would get otherwise. So, I don't know. The clan specific psychic powers seem okay, but nothing that's going to be overly centralizing in the meta. All right. Last bit from Psychic Awakening is the stratagems. So, primarily, this is a bunch of stratagems for the buggies that came out alongside the Orc Codex, which, again, as I said, with the custom jobs makes them going from subpar to maybe relevant in the meta. I don't think any of these strategies make them very good. And everyone could read them themselves, but I don't think there's anything of note here in relation to these buggies. So some of the standouts, I think the biggest one is that you can upgrade one of your war bosses to get an invulnerable save. So orc characters have zero invulnerable saves except for Ghazghal. But now you can upgrade a war boss if you don't have Ghazghal in your army to have a 4-up invulnerable save and plus 1 wound and plus 1 attack, which is awesome because orc bosses only have like 4 attacks. And going to from 4 to 5 attacks is really nice because they have these really killy power claws and you can upgrade them to like relic power claws and stuff like that. So getting that extra attack is super awesome. And of course, getting the invulnerable save is like, that's insane because so many times like a Smash Captain will run up and he'll put 3 wounds on your war boss, it's 9 damage, you're dead, okay? But if you have a 4-up invulnerable save, maybe you're only taking 3 or 6. And if you have 6 wounds on you, it turns out you're still alive because war bosses on war bikes will go up to 8 wounds with the stratagem, and even on foot, they'll go up to 7 wounds, which is great. So, like, you can survive, you know, 2 hits from a Smash Captain instead of being killed, and you get that invulnerable save to try and shrug a lot of those off, which is also very nice. There's a couple of different things for the Burnabama. So you can pretty much, an orc airplane can fly up to you, and then at the end of the movement phase, you just blow it up. It dies. You kill it, it explodes, and it automatically explodes if it has the explosion rule. So Burnabamas have, their explosion rule is on a 4-up. They do just flat 3 mortal wounds, everything within 6 inches. So you're going to see a lot of Burnabama. I think you're going to see some play here. where you have burner bombers, so they just fly up, they'll do their bombing run over a unit, and then there's a stratagem they can use to bomb a second unit that they flew over, or that's, sorry, not that they flew over, that's near a unit that they flew over, and they drop a second bomb in that unit that's less effective. I think it only hits on fives instead of fours like the normal burner bomber bombing run. But then you can just make the plane explode afterwards. So you're going to, like, you know, do some damage to something you fly over to a couple weak characters, and then blow up immediately.
So you're going to see some kamikaze attacks.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to see some kamikaze attacks. And three mortal wounds isn't anything to sniff at. It's not going to kill a bunch of characters. But you do that, and then suddenly you fly two, you have two more of these burn Obamas on next turn. One of them flies over and does it again, kills a bunch of characters. So you're going to see, I think you'll see some play with, like, three burn Obamas in a list, in an air wing detachment, who will be the pyromaniac subculture to get the plus one to their bombing runs. And then, you know, turn one, one of them flies up, blows up. The other two kind of positions themselves near you and shoot at you. And then if you do damage, they're, like, right in front of your line, so that if you kill them, they explode on a four up still. So you have to be kind of careful. You have to step away from them. And then if you don't kill them on turn one, then they fly up a little bit more and auto explode on some other characters or something like that. So I think you'll see some play with the burn Obamas, and it definitely will force your opponent to play differently, which is a, you know, something that's really strong, because when you force your opponent, when your opponent, it's like the Doom Sides, Alan. You've played against Doom Sides for Necrons, right?
Everybody has. Yep.
Yeah. So when you play against that, you have to play really differently. You have to spread your characters out, because you don't want them to do that stratagem where they, you know, can pick a point on the battlefield and explode, right? So here you're having the burn Obamas do something very similar, where you're forcing your opponent to play in a way that they may not otherwise play because of the threat that you have a kamikaze plane. So I think that's kind of a cool addition to the orc arsenal. Other standout stratagems, plus one damage to Meganob unit, which is really big. It's just one CP. You select a Meganob unit, and they get plus one damage with their melee weapons. It may be shooting, but I think it's just melee, which is really nice, because right now, Meganobs have access to two different kinds of weapons. Kill saws are straight damage two, and with this stratagem, they go to damage three, which is really nice. It lets you get through, like, things like paladins and even, you know, it's not really relevant in centurions, but a lot of three wound things out there. So going to straight flat damage three is really nice. And even on power claws, going from two to four damage is actually really nice, because your average is three. So you're still killing those paladins, and you have the opportunity to do four damage with the power claw and kill, like, a centurion or something like that. So I think you'll see a lot of play for that. I think I want to talk about some missed opportunities here for stratagem. I mean, this is kind of wishlist thing, but they didn't give orcs the ability to take a second warlord trait, which is, like, the one thing I wanted from Psychic Awakening. Was, like, everyone gets this ability, like a stratagem says, like, you know, you get another warlord trait on not your warlord, and orcs did not get that, and that's really, to me, a shame. We didn't get any, like, cool new warlord traits in this book, which is, like, I don't know. To me, it was a big missed opportunity. They also gave this stupid-ass stratagem to big mechs, where you can, like, give them plus one wound and also let them give them plus one weapon skill. They go to weapon skill two up. But it's like, what the fuck? Big mechs sit in the back with shock attack guns and shoot their guns at you. Like, they having plus one weapon skill on a guy with a choppa is, like, what the hell? It's so stupid. If that had been plus one ballistic skill, it would have been like, oh, fuck yeah, everyone's going to use that every game to increase their Relic Shock Attack on Blitz skill. It might have been even overpowered at that point, making him Blitz skill 4. But, you know, I think that was a big missed opportunity. They have these two other stratagems that people have kind of been talking about. One is you use it on a Luda unit to let them roll 2d3 and choose whichever one they want when they're determining the number of shots. The problem is you have to include a spanner. So one of the looters has to, like, lose his gun and become a spanner and just, like, carry a rocket launcher or something like that. Not a 48-inch auto gun, auto cannon like the other looters have. And when he does that, he can, like, let the other guy shoot better. So you lose a gun, and you spend 2 CP to get the ability to roll 2 dice throughout the game when you're determining the number of shots. And, like, to me, the math doesn't work out like that, because you lose a gun on one guy, and then you spend 2 CP before the game, and you still have the opportunity to roll 2 ones in a row. And you may get an opportunity where you just roll 2 threes, and you didn't even need that ability. And I think, like, if you just save those 2 CPs for CP rerolls on the Luda unit, you'd probably just be better served, because if you roll a 1, just CP reroll it into a 2 or a 3. Or you might get a 1 again, but that's kind of like, to me, the chance you take. But you also just might roll a 3 or 2 on your first roll and just be like, I'm good with 2. I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem worth it. But it might have some play with like smaller units of looters or something like that. But I think the cost is still a little bit too prohibitive. The other stratagem, last stratagem I want to mention is that was a missed opportunity. Was they gave flash kits a +12-inch range stratagem, cost 2 CP. It's nice because flash kits have some good guns. They're like strength 6, -2, 2 damage, which is pretty good. But it's only 24-inch range, and they're 3 shots each. So being able to go up to 36-inch range is nice. It's kind of a drag. It costs 2 CP, and I wish it had done something else. Like just getting +12 inches on your range is nice, but flash kit lists, for the most part, they're like deep striking in the middle of the board. So you're probably gonna be in range of most of the things you want to shoot. And I think giving them ignore heavy penalty or something on that turn when they use that stratagem would have been like a really nice upgrade that flash gets needed, but wouldn't have been too powerful. With this, it's just like, I guess if your opponent plays around your range, you can, one of your flash kit units can shoot further, which is, not a bad thing. It's not bad to have that ability or that stratagem in your back pocket, but I just feel like it is kind of underwhelming for 2 CP. So, in the end, I don't really think, first of all, the meta right now is non-existent. I think people are going to stew on lists for like 2 months, 3 months, and, come June, people are going to come out of their bunkers and everyone's going to like have this warped idea of what the meta is going to be. Cause everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, I've been, in my bunker for 2 months, really developing the perfect list. And everyone's going to, so the meta might change significantly because everyone just thinks it's going to change and everyone's going to bring a bunch of new lists. And then there's going to be the people who didn't change their lists who are still playing like Iron Hands or Raven Guard. And they're just gonna be like, oh, look at you. You guys, toned down your really good stuff and brought a bunch of crap that you think is good, but it's still probably not good. So I'm kind of interested to see what happens in like June or July when the tournament scene gets back up, hopefully back up and running.
Yeah, but we're also going to see a release of a lot more Psychic Awakening books too. I think we're going to see the Imperial Knights and the Chaos Knights and the Chaos Demons coming up, I think, are next on deck.
I have no idea, actually.
And then what else is coming up after them? And Harlequins and Death Watch and... I think Death Guard haven't received it yet, so we should see run through everybody's Psychic Awakening in a little while. So we're not gonna really know what's gonna happen, and everybody's just gonna show up and see who has the best ideas in this time off.
Yeah, and we also might get a ninth edition announcement. Today's the 25th. I think the Sunday or Saturday they're doing their quote unquote Adepticon preview. So they may preview ninth edition. I don't think they will, but I'm a pessimist. And if they do, I think it'll be.
Anyways,
it was supposed to be this coming weekend, I think.
This weekend? Yeah, because they're supposed to do their big preview. So I wonder if they still have their big preview or what's going to happen there. So.
Well, they should have. What I just said. I said they're doing a preview this Saturday on their like Warhammer community page. They're doing it remotely, so you can tune in at 6 a.m., although I doubt you'll be up. So,
if it's English time, I will be.
No, it's 6 a.m. our time. It's like 2 p.m. their time. in the end, I think orcs, the Psychic Awakening didn't change the top-end competitive orc list or even like the second-tier competitive orc list. I don't think you gained a whole lot. There's some new tricks, and I think there might be some play to like a air wing of 3 Burnobombers, but... I don't think the orc meta has shifted significantly in power level because of Psychic Awakening. So I don't know. I hope, hopefully we'll see a lot of more people experimenting with all these new rules, but in the end, I'm not too sold on its long-term competitiveness. So I guess, why don't you tell us about the Thousand Suns, man? I mean, their release was a little while ago, but you've had some time.
It's been a while, and we haven't really seen too much news out of them after their Psychic Awakening. The Grey Knights kind of were the stars out of the Wake the Dead, Ritual of the Damned.
The Damned.
So the Grey Knights were the big star and came out ahead. And there's some little hubbub about the Dark Angels, but we still haven't really seen what the Dark Angels can do. And the Thousand Sons are kind of brushed aside. So we're gonna talk a little bit about them. Now, their chapter tactic hasn't changed. They still get plus 6 inches to cast on all their psychic abilities. But what they did add to them is give them new cult abilities. So they have basically 9 cults, and each one gives you a psychic power that you get to use in addition to whatever psychic powers you already have. It gives you access also to a relic and to a warlord trait. Now, of course, you have to be, in a detachment, and special characters don't get it. So basically, you know, it's all the casters get access to these abilities.
Well, and just as a note, the nice thing about this is that you don't lose Thousand Sons. You're still Thousand Sons. You just get this on top of everything else. It's you don't actually have to lose anything. Unlike the Orc one, where it's like you have to give up your clan to get this crappier clan.
Yeah, like the new custom craft world traits. You know, you have to give up something. You don't have to. This is just gets tacked on. You just get some. You get a bunch of freebies. So like Oprah, that you get in a whole bunch of stuff. So as with everything that you go through, there's some cults that are good and some that are medium and some that are really going what. Now I come at it as a point of view of you want reliability. With Thousand Sons, let me tell you, as a Thousand Sons player, you need to cast your spells. You're all about your psychic powers. They're really good. You get to mostly ignore invulnerable saves. You get to ignore toughness and a bunch of other things. You just want to hammer people with psychic powers. And to be able to reliably get them off is really good. So you're always looking for like anything that helps increase your ability to cast and also increase damage. So the only really good one, and I think most people glommed onto this, the cult, is the Cult of Magic. Now, the Cult of Magic, their psychic power is basically the closest unit, and it's a 15-inch range, takes D3 mortal wounds, and all units within 3 inches take an additional wound. So basically, not only do you hammer the closest unit for one damage, D3 damage, but everybody else around it takes one damage. Now, their warlord trait is you get to add plus whenever you do damage to a unit, you do plus one damage to it. So that's really good. So whenever you addition out like a D3 damage from a smite or from this Cult of Magic spell, you'll do D3 plus one, which is really nice. And also, if you, it's based on per unit. So when you do all, so when you hit them with the their Cult of Magic spell, and you do all the units within 3 inches take one damage, they'll actually take two damage. So that'll be very devastating. And then they also have a relic, which is really good. And like I said about priorities to cast, the relic is plus one to cast. So everything in the Cult of Magic is top shelf material here.
You're essentially just getting better at what Thousand Sons already did, which was, you know, smite spam and kind of supporting other chaos builds with, you know, mortal wound output. So suddenly you're getting more reliable spell casting and more damaging spells. So like those are both slam dunks, right?
Yeah, then you can put it on a Demon Prince. You can give the Warlord trait to a Demon Prince, and you can also give him the Relic, so he gets plus one to cast. And so he also has access to Infernal Gateway. And if you know about that one also hits the closest model. And also everything around it takes a D3 wounds. And then with that ability to do one additional damage, you can if everything's packed in, like you talked about how the Doom size a minute ago, and you talk about your kamikaze flyers, this is the same thing. There are things now in the game that you don't want to be packed in like you used to be able to. It used to be, you know, when they got rid of templates, everybody's just like piled in together, everybody's all willy-nilly. Now, these days, there's some builds where you do not want to be all packed in. You need to be very aware and very spread out, because if you get hit with a couple of these, the Infernal Gateway and the Cult of Magic spell, you're going to be in a world of hurt. So
yeah, and then, I would one other thing, like, you also get that ability on targeted mortal wounds. Like, depending on what you're playing against, you can choose your spells before the game. So if you're playing with someone with a lot of characters, you know, these Thousand Sons have access to, like, three or four or two or three different targeted mortal wounds where you can target a character who's behind you. You're not hitting the closest target. So you can, like, have your Demon Prince fly up, do, like, Infernal Gaze and, you know, the other one from the Tzeentch tree and do 2d3 plus 2 mortal wounds to these guys and then warp time back or something behind your screen. So even if your opponent is, you know, just presenting you with a bunch of chaff, you can fly up and snipe a key character, potentially even two, you know, if they're like three or four wound characters, you can do four wounds to one and four wounds to the other potentially. So you get that kind of choice before the game on your plus one damage guy. Do I want to do the Infernal Gateway, their Cult of Magic spell where you're just, you know, doing AoE damage, or you can do, like, targeted mortal wound spells where you're picking off characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's really nice because normally, you know, because the Tzeentch is so swingy usually, because a lot of things are random damage, they have, like, the ceiling of, you know, the minimum you're going to do is 2 damage, but you have the possibility of doing 4 damage for your D3 is kind of nice, so... The next ones we're going to talk about is what I think are kind of situational ones. There's about four that I like. They're the Cult of Time, the Cult of Scheming, the Cult of Duplicity, and the Cult of Prophecy. And these ones, if you build around them, they're good, and they have some good qualities, and we'll talk about them. Now, the Cult of Time is really good if you have, like, a bunch of Scarab Occult Terminators. Because if you, on a 5+, their psychic power, you get to return one model, and a 9+, you return D3 models. Now, I told you about how you can get pluses to cast. You can get plus one to cast from a Warlord trait, you can get plus one to cast, well, you can't get a plus one to cast a relic, because that's Cult of Magic, but Terminators, it would be good with a Terminator Sorcerer, because a Terminator Sorcerer also gets a familiar, so you're plus two to cast right away. So that means, your Warlord trait is plus one to cast. So that means you can return a D3 models on a roll of a 7+. And of course, the Thousand Sons also have a psychic ability where if you're on two other casters, you can get another plus two, so you can return models. So that makes it easier to get a 9+. And, you know, if you're returning two Scarab Occult Terminators, that's basically 80 points of models, which is really nice. Now, also, in the combination, it kind of the Warlord trait actually kind of works in combination with the returning Scarab Occult Terminators, or also you can do return Rubric Marines. You can also do it on yourself. I'm not sure, but their Warlord trait is if you roll a 9+, you get one additional psychic power. So that's really good because you're trying to get rolling 9+ anyways to return models to. Models to your unit, and so just as a bonus, your Warlord trait, you'll get to cast an additional psychic power, which is kind of nice. And remember, so you got the cult powers in addition to all your psychic powers that you have. So you still have Smite, and you still have two other spells you can cast. So you still have a good selection of powers to use. And then their relic is really good as well. It's like if you die at the end of the phase, now it's at the end of the phase, which is good, you come back with D3 wounds. So it's hard to kill you at least in one. You can't be killed in one phase, but you can come back in the D3 wounds. And also the Thousand Sons have a psychic power where you get to heal. So as long as you don't get killed in your own turn, you can kind of beef yourself up and make yourself a little bit back to normal. So their relic is really good. Now, next one is Cult of Scheming. It basically gives a unit hit and run. And now that's really good. Now, if you're dealing with... Now, the way the Psychic Awakening worked is kind of like the way the Psychic Awakening worked with the orcs. Basically, with these powers and with the strats, they're buffing units that nobody really played before. So... a lot of these abilities have no effect on cultists and Zangors, which was the backbone of like almost all the Thousand Sons units. But what they're trying to do now is trying to buff up Rubric Marines and Scarab Occult Terminators. if you have an army with Scarabacol Terminators or Rubrics, one of their big weaknesses is they don't have fly, and they're mostly shooting you, especially Rubric Marines. They can't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. So if you can just touch them with a unit, that basically shuts them down. They're not going to be able to shoot. But give them hit and run, and it makes them a little bit more valuable. So you want to be able to, especially like Terminators, getting Terminators locked up and held up, because they have such a devastating firepower that that hit and run is actually really good. And they also have a stratagem that you can use one stratagem for zero CPs once per game. So basically, you get to use a free stratagem. Now, there's a lot of caveats with that because it's a relic. So you're either paying one CP for it or two CP for it anyways. And then you get to use a free strat. The only way I think that it's probably good is that if you burn yourself down to zero CPs, you can your opponent will like charge you with a bunch of units thinking you can't interrupt. And then it's like, oh, okay, I get to pull one stratagem out of my rear and use it. But it's... generally speaking, I can't really think of it being too valuable.
Yeah, well, my question is, did they FAQ it so you can only use it on Thousand Sun stratagems, or is it any stratagem that you have in your army?
There was no FAQ for it.
Oh, so yeah, so you could use it on fight twice for Bloodletters or something, so a really powerful 3 CP stratagem. You know, that might be, you're right. You do have to, unless it's your free relic, which it probably isn't. So you're going to spend a CP just to save two CPs, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. Let me read it. It's the Cult of Scheming. Let me look that up. Hold on a second. Cult of Scheming. Once per battle in any phase, you can use this theorem if a model with this relic is on the battlefield. If you do, select one stratagem till the end of the phase or until after that stratagem is used by the model with this relic's controlling player, whichever comes sooner, reduce the command point of the stratagem to zero. So yeah, it doesn't specify, there's no FAQ for it, and it doesn't specify that it has to be a Thousand Suns one. That's interesting.
That's nice. Yeah. All right, well, what's the other ones?
Cult of Duplicity. Now, if you're playing with Scarabacol Terminators and Rubric Marines, you are slow, and it's important that you can move. So basically, give your spells on a 7+, you can get one unit around. So basically, you can remove a unit and deploy within 9 inches of another unit. So that's kind of nice. Their Warlord trait is at the beginning of the game, you can redeploy D3 units. Now that... it lost some of its impact. If you go in first, it's kind of good to kind of react to your opponent's deployment. But because of the ITC, you know, now it's one person set up and the other person sets up. It kind of lost. It's a little bit of its luster. And also, it's not like three units, like it's a D3 unit. So it might not be too great.
Yeah, and that D3 seems like it's really stupid. Like redeployment stratagems and tricks, you need to have like certainty, because you're like, okay, I'm going to like, you can't deploy thinking like I need to then redeploy two units or three units. I can only count on one. So now I'm like, I guess if I get lucky, maybe I get to redeploy two or three, and then suddenly my strategy becomes better. But you need to be able to like know for certain how many units, you know. It's I think orcs have a D3 redeploy too. It's just like, what the fuck, D3? Like, come on. It's just so silly in my opinion.
And the relic is almost good. The relic is every battle round you roll. On a 1, you get your opponent gets a CP. And a 4 through 6, you get a CP. So that's not too great, because you're paying usually 1 to 2 CPs for a relic. And the chance to get a 2 CPs back is not that great. So on average. So usually how long does a character live in a game? Usually maybe about 4 rounds. And then so you got a chance maybe get 2 back. So it's like, no, it's just not good. Now the fourth one I like is Cult of Prophecy. On a 6+, Cult of Prophecy on a D6. Dice one. Yeah, that's a miracle dice. Basically, you roll a D6 and you get to swap it out for another one. Now they're very restrictive on what you can use it for. Basically, the armor save, the hit, the wound, stuff like that. So if you roll a 5 or 6, it's really great. It's like, okay, wow, I can make a save, make a vulnerable save, you know. I can, like, do a, you know, a wound roll that maybe you're having difficult wounding. But if you roll a 3 or a...
charge rolls, too, right?
Yeah, charge rolls, sure. But if you roll 3 or 4, you know, how great is it? How often are you going to use it? You know, it's like, and then if you roll 1 or 2, basically the only thing you can use a 1 or 2 for is a morale roll. It's like, okay. So I don't really, for using one of your valuable psychic spells, it's like, you know, so like, yeah, basically on a 5 or 6 is good, so you have a third of a chance of it being good, you know, and about a 50-50% chance of it being a mediocre, and then there's a 33% chance that it's going to be worthless. So it's like, yeah, okay. I do like their warlord trait. The warlord trait is if you get charged and you get to fire Overwatch, you can then immediately move 6 inches. So this is really good on a Demon Prince, because if you get charged, you can just move in somewhere. You can move out of charge range, and sometimes maybe you want to charge into charge range. But but especially with in combination to combination with heroic intervention, it basically means you can charge, like, you know, because the Overwatch phase goes before the assault phase, so you get to
And they have to get this, so you don't even have to have a gun, you know? So, like, the Demon Prince with no guns can still use this Warlord trait, which is kind of neat. So you can, let's say your opponent has a, you know, one squad that's, you know, 8 inches away from you. They're trying to make an 8-inch charge. You suddenly move 6 inches away. They're now 14 inches away from you. But you also can move in, I think, in any direction. So you can move within 3 inches of another enemy model, and then at the end of their charge phase, heroically intervene into that model, you know, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I didn't actually rate this very high at first. The reason why is because you have to fire Overwatch, and the one thing that you want kind of want to put this on is a Demon Prince. But then the FAQ came out and said, even if you don't have a gun in the Overwatch phase, you know, if you have the opportunity, you know, if you could fire Overwatch, you can move. So it's now good on Demon Prince, and so I kind of like it now. Spell I don't like. I do like their Warlord trait, but their relic is the. Is the money shot for the Cult of Prophecy. And that says anything within any unit within 6 inches can reroll one of your hit rolls, wound rolls, damage rolls. So basically it's the Salamander chapter trait that everybody knows about.
Is it 4? Is it like, can you reroll one hit and reroll one wound and reroll one damage, or just one of those three you get to reroll?
Let's read it. Cult of Prophecy. The Pythic Brazier. When a unit within 6 inches of a friendly model with this relic is chosen to shoot or fight with, you can reroll one hit roll, one wound roll, or one damage roll.
It's one of those three.
But it also, the advantage is also, it doesn't specify 1,000 suns. It doesn't have any keywords attached.
But they FAQ'd that to only apply to Cult of Prophecy.
You sure?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up now.
We'll edit this out. Or maybe not.
Or maybe we won.
Yeah.
Because I didn't... I looked at the...
I'm pretty sure they did. Yeah, I could be wrong. But it's unlikely.
Let's see now. If I have a Cult Warlord and I use the Relics of the Thousand Sun Stratagem... Give 1,000 suns character a different cult, a source of Shikana. Can I select the different? Here it is. Mythic Brazier. Here it is. When a Cult of Prophecy unit was. You're right. Okay. There it is. I was looking at the. I was looking at 1,000 suns FAQs, and it's in the errata, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
All right.
So those are basically the. The big winner is basically the Cult of Magic. That's basically, especially most Chaos players are going to take the attachment of just sorcerers and the, what's that called? what's the HQ detachment?
Supreme Command.
Yeah, Supreme Command Detachment, and they just want to do a lot of damage. And the if you take a Supreme Command with Cult of Magic, you're just gonna. I went up against Nick in our league, and he basically had he had Night Lords, he had a Death Guard, and he had the Supreme Command with Cult of Magic, and he just hammered me with psychic powers, and it hurt, does a lot of damage, and it hurts badly. He touched me badly. So that's a big winner. The other ones are just really situational, and some of them are so close, and some of them are just not worth your time. Like one is you have a psychic powers. Like if you roll a one, you can change it to a six, and if your opponent, if you roll to a six, you can change it to a one. It's like so situational, and such a hassle to get to that. And it's like so there's some things that were close, but it wasn't. But it's no use crying over spilled milk. Just don't take those Colts. So we're just in conclusion, we're going to talk about a few of the strats. Now we've got a page of strats. Now the strats are basically just boosting Scarab Occult Terminators and Rubrics. They don't really, and that's what they're trying to do, I guess, with the Psychic Awakening. Now, there's a few ones that are really good. Now, one you're always going to take is gives you one bonus Warlord trait. Now, the Thousand Sons have some good Warlord traits. Plus one to cast is one of them you're always going to take. And if you take Cult of Magic, that one additional damage is probably one you're going to take. So those are pretty good. Another one is Adepts of the Immaterium. And basically, it's one CP, you ignore perils. So this is really good because I can't tell you how many times you have to burn one CP anyways, kind of reroll, try to ignore it anyways. This way, if you roll boxcars and you get a good result, you don't have to worry about blowing yourself up. And then also, if it's done from a rubric sorcerer or a sorcerer in the Scarab Occult Terminators, because you do take a D3 mortal wounds and it'll kill some of your rubrics, which are considered sorcerers, you'll do another D3 wound. So basically there's a chain reaction whenever you eat a peril. So the fact that you ignore perils is really nice. And another one is for rubrics and source Scarab Occult Terminators. Another one you can frequently use is Abominable Foes. It's basically, it gives you plus one invulnerable save. So you get, you can, through spells and everything like that, it's pretty easy to get a unit down to a three up invulnerable save, which is kind of nice. It'll slow down some of the nastiness that's out there. Now, there's some situational ones that are nice. One is Risen Rubrique. It basically allows you to scout one unit of rubrics. I actually, for a while there, I took a unit of, basically a detachment of three squads of Nurgling, just because I wanted something that was midfield to keep infiltrators away and basically for board control. And now you can kind of do that with just one squad of rubrics for one CP. Another one is a Sorcerer's Infusion. Basically Yeah, this is one that's used after you cast a spell. So if you cast a spell on a 9+, you can heal D3 wounds to yourself or basically add a model that's already been killed. So, and we talked about that, the other cult, that if you roll 9+, you get to add a D3. You add D3 wounds, so basically you can spend one CP and add another model on that, so you can get three D3 plus one models back. And then Internal Fusillade, for one CP you get the fire, but the restriction is if you don't move. Now,
on Rubric Marines, right?
No, it's on Rubrics and Scarab Occult Terminators.
Oh, cool.
But here's a problems with that is the rubrics and Scarab Occult Terminators are relatively short range. They only have a 24-inch range, and rubrics really only deadly within 12 inches. So it's going to be really hard to get them not to move and be within 12 inches. It's a little better on Scarab Occult Terminators because Scarab Occult Terminators, you know, they can fire to full effect, basically four shots each. at 24 inches. So they're a little bit easier to stand still and be able to shoot. But man, not being able to move for one turn, especially in a short range thing. So basically, you have to move up, and then next turn, you're not going to have to be able to fire. So unless they come to you with, you know, shooting twice is going to be a tough ask. But
yeah, it's not going to come up very often in actual gameplay.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is correct. And the last one is, I find it interesting, is called Yoke Automatia. Basically, for two CPs, I think the custodians have a thing, same thing. Basically, if you get charged, basically if one of your characters gets charged, you can do a 2d6 heroic intervention. So basically, if one of your characters get charged, you get to countercharge them, basically. And so which I think is kind of good if you just have characters out there and nobody will really expect it. Because if you ever charge one of those custodes units that have bikes or whatever and they charge you back, it makes you sad. But overall, they tried to increase the rubrics and tried to, with the spells and some of their abilities and with the stratagems, but rubrics just don't cut it, I don't think, in the meta. Now, I've seen a lot of people use them, but their firepower is not that great. They have the weaknesses where they can just be touched, and they have no power weapons or no, you know, they have the additional attack now because if you're charged or being charged because, you know, they're Space Marines. But rubrics just really can't beat their way out of a wet paper bag. Whereas on the other hand, I think a lot of these abilities, a lot of these strats are going to be really good with the Scarab Occult Terminators. They have such massive amount of firepower. They have a good durability, be able to resurrect dead units. I think we're going to see a lot more Scarab Occult Terminators. I think they're going to do a lot better now, especially since, you know, their weaknesses of being locked in combat. You know, you can kind of give them hit and run with some of the cults, and then just basically their durability is much improved. So sum it up, they're just basically with Cult of Magic, they're just devastatingly offensive as far as damage goes, and the Scarab Occult Terminators became much better.
Yeah. That's a good summary. I still have not seen a game or heard of anyone really having much success with like a big unit of Scarab Occult Terminators, but I'd like to see someone try. You know, it's kind of shitty Paladin Bomb.
Yeah, we haven't really seen the Thousand Suns really do too much, but I got some time on my hands. Maybe I can paint up a couple units.
Sure can.
Take them out for a test drive. The problem is also their elites, and so.
Yeah. Well, that is our summary, our COVID-19 deciding to actually review content now because there's nothing actually to talk about in games played kind of thing. But if you guys have any comments, feel free to email us those comments or criticism to focusedfirepodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Or check us out on Facebook. Give us a like.
All right. In the meantime, we'll be reading codexes and painting models. All right.
All right, guys.
Have a good night, everybody. Cheers, take it easy.